Are you ready to cultivate confident, resilient, and mentally strong dancers? Introducing Lauren Ritchie's Mental Skills Masterclasses, designed to build dancers from the inside out. Join them live and online for a transformative journey where each month, dancers will dive deep into a different mental skill, including confidence, growth mindset, motivation, resilience, and stress regulation. In these engaging one-hour sessions, you will learn, reflect, and practice personalized mental skills, exercises, and techniques that you can immediately apply to your training, performances, and everyday life. This program is perfect for dancers age 12 and above who are committed to growth, curiosity, and community. Dancers can log on individually or as dance teams. And don't worry if the live classes don't align with your schedule, as sessions will be recorded and available online for viewing at your convenience. Visit www.withlauren.ca or follow the link below for more details and grab your information package today.
So, you know, people that are against tank, they're just against tech. They believe that 5G is going to kill you or, you know, like there's a lot of...
I love the fact that you're focusing more on the arts, because I think nowadays we are so troubled by the modes of presentation, right? Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup. Thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this weekly podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. This episode, I speak to Gilles Jobin, choreographer and artistic director of the Gilles Jobin Dance Company based in Switzerland. He's also the first ever resident choreographer at the European Organization for Nuclear Research, or CERN in short, based in Geneva. And we talked about technology and the augmented reality. Hello, Gilles. Such a pleasure to have you here. I would like to first of all just say welcome to The Background Dancer.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Now, before I start every episode, I usually tell the audience how I came across your particular profile, right? And it was really through my friend Zilia Tan, who was my classmate back in the Hong Kong Academy for Performing Arts. And she herself is such a technology enthusiast, you know, even from a very, very young age, I think. But when she found out about technology, it just exploded. And, you know, during the latter years of our studies, she was just really into the work. And that was, I think that's what led me to your company as well. On Instagram, I found you and I was like, wow, this is such a fascinating company and the work that you do. So before we begin everything, my first point of curiosity is, how did all this come to be, right? So can you just walk us through your journey as an artist into this huge umbrella field of dance technology?
Well, I've kind of been always interested in technology. You know, technology is part of what we do, because, I mean, when you're on a stage, you need to have some tech, you need to have light desk, you need to have sound, you know, different effects. So this is all already technology. So we in the theater world and the dance world, I think we are used to play around with different elements that are going to enhance what we do. I did a piece called Text to Speech, where we were using computers to read text on stage. And that would allow us to modify the text as it goes. It was the text were about, like news, kind of war news, but I would change, instead of, the Americans invading Afghanistan, they would invade Switzerland. So I would kind of relocate, where the events would happen, and this kind of would change your perception of, you know, all those news that are coming in and that you don't really, you know, you don't really hear anymore. But when something happened on your neighborhood, then you have a different situation. So the technology in this case was helping me to modify the text, like almost on the fly. So that was always my approach. My approach is a tool-based approach. So I use technology if I need it for something. I don't think technology or dance and technology is a genre as itself. I think it's a tool and mostly an invisible tool. I mean, the most interesting technology is invisible. Then I saw the film by Wim Wenders, Pina, which is a 3D film, a documentary on Pina Bausch work. And I was really amazed by the 3D images I saw. And I thought, wow, this is really like augmented cinema for dance, because your dance is difficult to put on a 2D screen. I think it's a different job to work in 3D, as is what we do as choreographers, and to work as a cinematographer in 2D, where you have to take into account, you know, what is outside the frame and the frame. So it's a very different language, I think, than the volumetric language that we are using in choreography. When I saw the 3D images in digital images, you know, this high resolution 3D image, I thought, wow, this is something I could do. I could maybe have a project of a film in 3D, because then I could like bring, you know, the bodies of the dancer into a cinema in 3D dimension. And I could like somehow make a different diffusion of my work, not live, at a distance, and showing, you know, really kind of something that is really close, I think, to reality, because that's what we do. We are like 3D experts, I think, choreographers, and we, you know, we work with space, movement, but also time, of course. But also, when I talk about space, it's not only the space in which we are, it's also the space within the bodies. So it's like a significant space. We use space as a tool for meaning. So I thought, well, that's quite interesting. So I started this project of the movie Womb that started in 2012. It took me about 4 or 5 years to have it done and financed. So finally we did it. But in the meantime, I started to discover motion capture. So I knew about motion capture from the old days. In my mind, it was a very complicated thing. There's a lot of cable coming out of here, and like you couldn't move so much, and it was very like you could maybe record like 2 or 3 seconds of a sequence. So it was like really a heavy duty kind of tech world to get into. But when I saw how light and how easy it has become nowadays, you know, a few years ago in 2016, I went to visit this company called Artanim, which is, they have a studio like here in Geneva. And I tried the motion capture system. So I was, you know, just like amazed by the possibilities. So straight away, I did a duo with Susanna, my partner, and we did the duo that we presented. That was like a film that we'd present at the beginning of a piece. So the difference, like showing a movie in this case, like I had an animation of this duo and I could place the camera anywhere I want. So I was live moving the camera. So I was already kind of feeling that the liveness of it, that you could do things in real time with those images. You could kind of use the original sequence in many different ways. You can change avatars, you can change the quality of the body, you can put a lot of different camera angles that would be impossible in the real world. So I was already kind of seeing that I could enhance my work by using the digital world. And then one day this company, they called us, Artanim, they called us, say, look, we have this immersive system. So people could wear a backpack and you could put like markers on your head, on your feet, a VR headset, and you could see yourself as an avatar. So you could move into a space freely, into a fairly big space, about 6 by 5 meters. So this was like amazing. They say, look, we put your duo into our demo. So do you want to check it out? So we came, they put us the equipment, and I could see myself real size dancing with Susanna. And I was with Susanna. So I was me and Susanna, seeing Gilles and Susanna. And we could, you know, walk around and go in between. And it was like, just like, that was like a different experience. So, you know, very quickly I told them that I wanted to make a piece with their tech, so that they let me use their tech. And I produced a piece, and that was VRI. And VRI was really like the launch of this kind of digital idea, because I think the piece was really groundbreaking in the sense that I don't think any dance companies ever done something like this with such a high degree of freedom for the audience. So that was really, like, I think, a marking experience for the audience. We had people that came again, people that were dreaming about it. I mean, we had so much feedback from this piece because, I mean, even us, when we do it again, even though we have done it like so many times, we still are really kind of hooked in this kind of full on immersive, setup. And also you have like, so I could play with scales. I had dancers that were 35 meters high. I had really, like, really small dancers. I could teleport the people from one place to another. I could be in the middle of big desert. So there was really no limit in terms of what we could do. So this piece was very successful. We toured it a lot. There was a lot of demand for this piece, a lot of touring, a lot of traveling. We've been to Asia, we've been to America, we've been South America and Europe, Russia. I mean, really, and there was still much more to do with the piece. But the piece got two stops. One stop is that we lost the license from our partner because they had the great idea of to sell their business to the American capitalists. So we now lost the license. But anyway, in between, we had only a 3-year license to operate. But then the COVID came. So that was just give like a total stop. Anyway, to any diffusion, any traveling, all we had like about 10 gigs that were canceled. And so that was just like a disaster, just like for everybody.
So throughout the conversation, I think we will be talking about these different various forms of technologies that you have produced over the years, right? And one of them that I really want to talk about is Dance Trail, this augmented reality app that you can get on the Apple App Store for free that helps bring virtual dancers into the real world. And I've played around with it a little bit. It is very, very fun indeed. So tell us a little bit about that.
By the way, you and your listener, they can download it for free if they have a compatible iOS phone, and they can play with it. So the idea is you can place dance where you want. You can make videos. You can make photos. It's more like a joyful kind of toy somehow. But that piece was selected at Sundance Film Festival. So, that was interesting to see that even such a cutting edge program is interested in this type of experience, which are really new, I think, for dance and how accessible it is. And then we did, then came COVID, and then we were working on a piece that was for the stage called Real Time. And it was a duo with two dancers with a live motion capture and video projection on the back. So you would see them being motion capture on stage, and you would see the result of them being avatar, being in the virtual world on a projection. But the COVID caught us like a month and a half before the opening. So, at the time there was so many things we didn't know, and mostly we didn't know when it was going to get better. And I think we still don't, by the way. And it kind of gets better, but better on a certain level. But for us, in terms of international traveling, it's just like impossible. Yep. So it was a big questioning at the moment. What should we do? Should we kind of postpone? Should we, to next year, next season, or whatever the project? And I thought that with all the experience we had in a digital creation, that the best bet we could take was to give up anything that has to do with stage and to go full on digital. So we decided to cancel the real-time piece that we were working on. There was 1 month and a half work still to do. So we paid everybody until the end. We said, well, that's it. This is over. We're going to do something else. And we move on to digital projects. So during the pandemic, we did a lot of development and searching and trying, especially for real-time performances. So that became our kind of new thing is to create real-time performances in VR, but also, just like using the motion capture and the network facility, so you can have like audience connected from different places in the world, and you can also perform from our studio into the world and without having to travel.
So VR1 being probably the best piece that the company has done. However, my second favorite is La Comédie Virtuelle, where you actually created this sort of virtual reality experience in a theater, right? And I really took interest in this piece as well as the entire experience, because I think it reminds us of what's going on in today's world, which is virtual conferencing. And you not only mapped out the dancers, but throughout this piece, you mapped out the facility itself, the theater. And I think this really paves the way for many of us who would want to attend future events that are worlds away from our geographical location. And I think that's probably something that we should look more into heading into the future. Could this really be the new experience of attending theater pieces? So talk us through a little bit about that as well. Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe with this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show.
So that was a project that started in 2017 with La Comédie in Geneva, which is a new building. That is a new theater. It's the main theater institution in Geneva. And they're having a new building. They've been waiting for 30 years for this building. And so we said, I told them, well, you're building a theater for the 21st century. Maybe you would like to have already a digital copy of it, a functional digital copy of it, where people can in a multi-user context, come and see in a group and also connect it at a distance and eventually to do live performances inside this virtual theater. So the project took us about a year to have it done. There's some animation inside as well. But then again came COVID and the opening was postponed. The opening of the real theater was postponed. It's still not officially open. By the way, we'll open in end of August officially. So all this also created a lot of kind of disruption in the plan. But the plan we had to create live performances at a distance, we thought maybe it was going to take a year and a half or two before we can do this. And they thought, yeah, but maybe now with the COVID, it's time to get this happening now. So we used the time of the lockdown to do some testing about motion capture at a distance. And it worked. So it started to work. So we said, okay, let's do this piece inside the theater, which is La Comédie Virtuelle Live Show. We presented at Venice Film Festival. It was selected in competition. So this was created like in super fast kind of 2 months kind of rush project. But still, I mean, you know, we did it. And now we have a functional theater we can invite. And that's how we met Zelia, by the way. So Zelia, I saw her on Instagram dancing with a motion capture suit. And I just contacted her. And then like just a few weeks later, we invited her to perform inside the theater and we met. She's like, she can be even an understudy for our dancer. If we have a missing dancer, we can always call her in Hong Kong and she can perform with us, you know, so. Because our objective before the pandemic was to bring together all those digital experiments onto the stage. So we had a small performance that was real time going on, but we also had the project of a big one on the big stage, what's called Camouflage. And this was already set and ready to start the production. But we decided to totally redirect all this. So even the big stage production has been abandoned. And now we develop inside the theater, instead of making a production, we have decided to develop a program called Comédie Digitale. And so those resources are more into inviting artists to be part, to come into a motion capture studio and do some projects. So we are trying now to open. Because also one very big turning point for us was when we started to have our own motion capture equipment. That was like the game changer for us.
You know, when I think about motion capture, before I think about anything dance related, the first thing I would normally associate it with is the film, The Hobbit. And as you know, Benedict Cumberbatch was so beautifully filmed, having motion capture nodes, right, all over the body, and playing Smaug, the dragon. And, you know, that was kind of like, wasn't the first time I've seen it, but that was probably the best done act of motion capture. And throughout, you know, the conversation so far, we have been talking about various types of technologies with regards to dance. Now, one thing I do want to point out that really piqued my interest is your experience at CERN. Now, that is a completely different type of technology, a different type of investigation. But CERN, the European Organization for Nuclear Research, is something that I'm also very interested in because, you know, I'm also a bit of a science guy. I really like, you know, quantum physics, quantum mechanics. So take us through a little bit about that as well. Like, how is it like working with something completely different from virtual reality and really going into an actual scientific laboratory?
Well, that was before virtual reality for me. I was not into virtual reality. We're talking about 2012. That's when I did the residency at CERN. Well, this came out because CERN had has now a cultural program called Collide at CERN. You know, CERN is a remarkable laboratory. It's huge. It's like the biggest in particle physics in the world. Like most of the particle physicists are, you know, half of the time they're in Geneva. Well, not now, but before COVID. So it's a huge laboratory that we mostly ignore in Geneva. We don't really know what they're doing, you know, like, and we have people coming from the other side of the world, like, oh, you know, I'm going to CERN, just like magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like a, you know, massive reference. And I thought, well, you know, I don't really know about CERN. I don't know much about particle physics. You know, I'm a dumb dancer. You know, I haven't, in Europe, you know, dancers don't go to universities. So, you know, the formation is kind of really dance, and don't think too much. So, for me, there was this opportunity of this bursary. So I applied and then I got it. So for me, it was like a life changing again experience because, you know, again, as a dancer, as an artist, you can feel impressed by tech or by all these kind of Nobel Prize kind of professors that you meet at CERN, and you might feel like the subject is so complex that you might not grab anything of it and just have like, you know, just the wrong question all the time. So, but what was remarkable in these residencies is a curated residency. That means that they take care of you. They kind of organize meeting with people that they think that, you know, you're going to connect. So they organize the meetings with the physicists, and this, you know, it's not like they give you, like they throw you inside and do whatever you want. So there's a framework. So Ariane Cook, which was in charge of the program at the time, I think she did it like really beautifully. And she really had this kind of very subtle way to kind of introduce the right people. So for me, it was really changing because I lost my complex, you know, my science complex. Now I feel like I'm science able, in the sense that, you know, I don't pretend to be a physicist or even a mathematician, you know, but I don't need to be. That was my big discovery. You know, you don't need to be a mathematician or even a physicist to understand particle physics. You just need to understand the general idea of it, which is super interesting. And on a more practical level, I mean, the encounters were so interesting with the scientists. I think what the most constructive encounter that we had was when we were exposing our strategies. So they were telling me what their scientific strategies, and I was telling them about my choreographic strategies. I've been asked like so many times, like, oh, you know, you're a resident at CERN. Do you help physicists making discoveries? And I was like, of course not. I mean, obviously not. But don't think that, like, just like they don't help me to find solution for my choreographic problems.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So when they try to give me ideas, then that's normally their bad ideas. And when I'm asking like two many questions is usually stupid questions. So I kind of found out that at the end of the day, the most interesting part was to discuss about how, what are our strategies. And I realized that those scientists are very advanced, but they have a, some have a very old school idea of what is art. So they don't really know what is, what are the strategies of contemporary artists, which are much more conceptual than what they think, much more advanced in terms of technology and using different type of tools, even just like computers, just to work. So I think that's, that was very, for me, very important. I learned to search, you know, I learned to research, and I didn't know before that because, you know, again, you know, not being taught in universities, they don't teach us how to learn. They teach us how to do things, you know, how to execute, but not
how to
yes, exactly. They teach you how to dance, not how to discover things. So for me, it was a game changing. And I think I wouldn't be, so much into tech if I haven't done through certain, it really kind of opened my field of view. And I thought, oh, make me feel better also about myself. Like when I could see those like super, you know, next level scientists being interested in my artistic strategy, I thought, well, you know, at the end of the day, I know things that not so many people know. I have my own skill about space. I have things to say about space and the space in between the people. And, you know, I'm much more able than maybe than I thought to, even on a scientific side.
Hey everyone, if you're like me and prioritize online privacy and security, you're going to love NordVPN. Not only does NordVPN safeguard your internet connection and protect your personal data from hackers and snoopers, but it also offers an amazing advantage: seamless access to geo-blocked content on platforms like Netflix. With NordVPN, you can browse the web with peace of mind and enjoy your favorite shows and movies from anywhere in the world. Plus, their user-friendly interface makes it easy for anyone to stay protected online. And here's the best part. NordVPN offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free. Trust me, I've been using this for 2 years now, and it has totally changed my life. What's more, you can get the basic plan for as low as $5 a month. By signing up through the referral link below, you not only support your online peace of mind, but also help me and the continuity of this show. So, sign up for NordVPN today, and let's serve smarter and safer together. Well, thanks for taking us back there, because it's always nice to know the origins of how you created your own trajectory. Now, two very good points there that you brought up is, firstly, the democratization of various fields, right? The greatest innovations in today's world is not inventing something new, but making something more accessible, much more understandable to many people. So I think, just like you said, science, you don't have to be a genius, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to be able to understand the simplest principles of science and technology. And the second thing you said, which I think is incredible as well, is how do we define or even explain to people what contemporary dance is? And contemporary dance very much is the association with various contemporary practices today. That's, you know, technology, you know, that's fashion, that's all these different things that's, you know, that contributes back to the world of dance. So the next thing I want to ask you is something that I've been coming across very often ever since I started dancing as well. And you brought it up as well, is that as a dance enthusiast, as a dance lover, I often find people having such a lack of, let's not talk about science, let's talk about technology first, yeah, like technological literacy, or even sometimes like an aversion, just like resistance to embody, to embrace technology. Now, the most basic level of that is social media, right? Like a lot of people don't want to play with that. And then, of course, when you talk about the next level, virtual spaces, that the thing that you are very much embedded with, it's just whole full-blown overwhelming. So why do you think that is? Can I have a bit of your thoughts on that as well?
Well, first, contemporary dance is very wide. So you have very different tendencies into contemporary dance. You have some that are like super conceptual, you know, like almost like visual artists doing almost nothing with bodies that don't move, or that are like very radical approaches. And then you have like very dancey contemporary dance that is very much about virtuosity and technique. and like just like being fast and quick and beautiful and amazing, you know. So and everything in between. And then you have all the urban dance, then you have all the different dancing from different countries, you know, the contemporary dance made in Africa, contemporary dance made in different zones of the world that also have different kind of expression. Also they have different schools. You will see that, you know, the Americans, they have a certain type of kind of abstract Cunningham, you know, Martha Graham kind of line. And in Europe, they maybe have like a more dance theater kind of approach. And maybe in Asia, they have like something in they mix in between, or like in Mexico, they have a very modern approach to contemporary dance, for instance, in South America in general, because of their tradition, like Jose Limon, or this kind of choreographer that were important to them. So I think we have different history in dance, in contemporary dance. So we come from different ways. And then there's this link with ballet. And a ballet, I mean, you see it with the success, you know, there's so many scandals in ballet at the moment that are coming out. You know, it's such a kind of a violent tradition in terms of teaching, very hard, very selective, very, you know, like almost against the body, you know, the old school. So there's this kind of old school mentality in dance, also lack of study, you know, like people just only study dance. They do dance. They don't know nothing else. Lack of curiosity. I don't know. I mean, this is just like you will find the same problem in theater, like, you know, like spoken word, like the typical spoken theater. Also, people are really afraid of technology. You know, people are just afraid in general of everything that is new. So the change is frightening, changing. Like, what will I become if I work with the body in a technological work? What is my body expression? How I'm going to come across, you know, this discussion we're having with my body, or, you know, with my face, like all kind of badly lit, you know? So it's like, I think there's probably a question of lack of control. People feel like they're going to lose control, or that, you know, younger or different people or opportunist people are going to jump in front of them and attract all the light, and they're going to be fading out in the dark. I don't know. I mean, I don't really think in such a way, you know. I don't position myself regarding to others. I just try to find my own way. And what I think is important for me, what is relevant for me, and also what is feasible. I mean, what is my context that allows me to defend, for instance, my fight is to defend that what I do is choreography. You know, when people are like, oh, now you move into the mixed kind of, and when I'm into the virtual space, it's the same situation than in the 60s in New York, when they were starting to dance on the roof or to dance on the street, and people were saying, oh, this is not dance because it's not in a theater. Because dance is only in a theater. But now any festival in the world has some outdoor dancing or some roof dancing.
I'm speaking with Gilles Jobin, artistic director of the Gilles Jobin Dance Company and resident choreographer at CERN. Among the many awards that he has received for his contribution to dance include the Cultural Leonards Prize by the Leonards Foundation, the Collide at CERN Geneva Prize, the Swiss Grand Award for Dance, and the Best Art and Experimental Film by the San Francisco Dance Film Festival for his work, Womb. Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe who this episode can benefit, and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show. Now, I always think about technology as more of an extension rather as a distraction, right? And I know that it could always act as either one of these two things in our lives, especially as dancers. But to me, there is such an importance, or at least there's a growing importance, for technology to truly make a presence in our lives. So what do you think is the true importance, or even why is it so crucial for technology to really become a part of dance?
You know, is the lack of modernity, of accepting that things are evolving, and also is a lack of knowledge that the media never replace another. You know,
yeah.
Television didn't kill the radio. You know, radio didn't kill the cinema. You know, cinema didn't kill theater. They're just like new media that come. There are new spaces to experiment stuff, and nobody pretends to replace, you know, like stage performance by virtual performance, even in there in real time, even if they're live. What we propose is a different experience, something that you will never live in a live performance. Mm. You will never be surrounded by 35 meters high dancers in a live performance. It's impossible. It just doesn't happen. You can give them as much food as you want. They will never grow to 35 meter high, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's the thing. So, and also I think, you know, you will soon realize that people are talking about technology, almost nothing about technology. So that's, you know, the lack of culture. It's a lack of culture. So I think now if you're a contemporary artist, you need to know, you know, what's available around you, what is possible for you to do, what are the new, but then you can just stay alone on the stage and, you know, just do your own. You know, what's important is to make good pieces, may they be digital or live pieces. So that's, I think the question is an artistic question, really. It's not about tech. You know, tech is a fake problem to think about tech. It just, you know, people were amazed, you know, by the moving image. Like when cinema came like 100 something years ago, like they were like, oh, wow, it's a photo that is moving. You know, what is this? So they would go into a fair, and then that would be like a kind of a wow thing. Like, oh, I've seen a train. I've seen people coming out of a factory, you know. And then, but after a few years came an artist, and the artist was Méliès. And Méliès, he was a magician. And Méliès, he was coming from the stage. So he saw the possibilities for him as a magician, as a stage person. He saw the cinema as a tool for creation. So he thought, oh, there's something to do there. So he started to make his own movie, but he didn't have a clue. Nobody had a clue at the time because nobody was making movies, which is like so new. You know, you needed to buy, you know, like, I mean, I think he constructed his own projector or camera. I think his own cameras, because the Frère Lumière didn't want to sell it to him. You know, so it was like we were, and I think now with the new tech, we are in this kind of moment, this kind of Méliès moment. You know, we didn't invent the technology. It's there. It's kind of pretty good, and there's many possibilities. And we artists are like, oh, wow, there's something we can do with this.
Now, for people who may be interested to start a career in the technology field or even dance technology field, what advice would you be able to give them in order to make life maybe a little bit less daunting, perhaps?
So I can understand that some artists just don't click. They don't have to, but they don't have to be to position themselves against, you know? So it's like strange. Why would you be against? You know, I'm not against body alone on stage. I mean, you know, I've done it. I don't mind. I mean, I've seen beautiful pieces, and I'm gonna look at your piece and say, yeah, well, you know, I was touched, you know, maybe in VR or in for real. So dance is a little bit old school, I think, in the tradition, you know, like many people, for instance, something I've stopped doing since at least 2001, which is like to dance together. It's something that for me is like, I don't see the point, you know. I mean, of having three dancers doing exactly the same, you know, is something I believed in. I thought that was a way to enhance the power of my movement, to kind of multiply it. And now I don't believe in this anymore. I think it's just like, I don't see the point, you know. And again, when I see a piece that is so well done, I'm like, I see the point in their piece, but in my work, I don't see the point anymore to kind of choreograph. You know, I'd rather inspire the dancer. I'd rather give them rules of a game and let them play with the game, because I think that their attitude and the way they're going to do it is going to be much more interesting if they are the creator of their own movement. So, you know, like a football player, you know, football is not improvised, but it's reactive, and it's not set. So, but what is set are the rules of football. So you put the team together inside the field, and they know the rules, and they can play, and then it's football, you know. So I do basically the same with my choreography. I invent some rules, invent a stage. I teach the rule, I teach the quality of movement, and then when I'm happy with this, then they can play with it. And actually, that's what we've been doing in VR, and it is in this digital project, and it has proven to be very, very helpful, because you can stay very flexible. We don't need to choreograph everything, and we can change, like, just by instruction base. You just tell, you know, make notes, and people then so they can adapt to the situation. So, because we always have to negotiate with the tech, you know. So there's a lot of waiting about. And so, you know, it's like you need to find kind of way that you stay flexible and find also movement or artistic solution to a tech problem. So there's always this kind of, so, you know, people that are against tech, they're just against tech. They believe that 5G is going to kill you. Or, you know, like there's a lot of
I love it.
Ambience.
Yeah. I love the fact that you're focusing more on the arts, because I think nowadays we are so troubled by the modes of presentation, right? Like, what is it going to, let's say, fulfill in terms of the brackets of proposals and applications? And like, if it's something completely new, maybe you stand a better chance of getting that money or something like that, you know. But once again, that's the purest set
no,
of mindset.
It's like, not yeah. true, because if you look at the reality in dance, like the most traditional dance get most of the money. So what's the problem? Yeah. You know, ballet, yeah. you know, ballet is getting everything. So like, what is their problem? You know, they're just afraid of losing their power. You know, I think it's a power game also in dance. Yeah. And you know, the dance is not as open as it's supposed to be, you know, as it presents itself to be. There's this kind of thing that is like a very open and multi-ethnic, but it's not, you know. There's a lot of racism, there's a lot of chauvinism in ballet and in dance. So, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And I think, you know, the way you get into tech is the same, but if you think about it, in society is the same, you know. When, like, here in Switzerland, we have these people freaking out with 5G connection, but they don't even know what it is. It's just like a moral kind of principle that they think that, you know, we're going too fast and there's too many things coming up and that we don't need anymore to go faster. I mean, they're all saying this on Facebook, by the way, with their super broadband, you know. But they for them is enough speed, so they cannot consider that maybe other fields need more speed to do things that will become feasible when we have more speed. So it's a kind of a reactionary position, I think.
Yeah. And that leads me actually to my next question. And I think it's great to now maybe shift gears a little bit to talk about a bit about the company, right? And one of the things that really I think I'm very fascinated about is the assembling of the team. So what are maybe some of the challenges? What were some of the challenges in actually getting this team around? Because I believe it is such a small subset of people who could fit with your model, with your vision of the company. So yes, maybe expand a bit on that as well.
Well, I think, you know, creating a company, a group of people is always it's a mix of chance. I mean, of course, I have to give the right direction. But also I need to be lucky enough to find the right people. And sometimes just like meeting someone and this person maybe will help you to kind of open up your field of view, no? So in that case, when we did the movie Womb, there was this young guy, he's Camilo, and he was doing some media thing for us. I mean, doing the set, and then doing some tryout, and then I hired him. I'm my assistant for directing the movie, and then he was really like he became like really the interface between the tech world and the art world. So he's also an artist, so he has this kind of understanding of my side and on the other side. So he was helping me to start to have the dialogue, so I could develop with him and ask him the question and kind of brainstorm with him about what is feasible, not feasible, too complicated, simple, and we kind of ping pong in this kind of different exchange of idea. And then we needed to have new collaborators. So we need to have a 3D artist, because that's someone that is very specialized in 3D environments, that can create what you see the avatars and the set. So we found someone, his name is Tristan, he's been with us since. And he was just free. I mean, he just didn't have a job. So he showed up and we liked him and we got along and that's how it started. And then we started to think that maybe that would be better to have like a fixed company, like fixed people that they stay like they're always the same. So we continue to work with the same people. So it's the same artistic crew, it's the same tech crew. So that was also super important to keep the same dancers as well, because there's a learning curve in using the motion capture system. Yep, and Azilia can tell you about it. So there's a different type of system and different type of reaction to this system. So there's a learning curve. So it's such an unknown world that you need people that they learn by themselves. So we create knowledge and experience. So we rely on every project we do. The next one is kind of the result of the one before. Mm. So that was really the way we work. And then I have a tech director, which is normally more on for the touring. But during the pandemic, he learned how to use the motion capture system and to do motion capture and to clean the data. Susanna, she's our lead dance artist and my partner. And she started to learn how to use Unity and she started to learn how she can do her own mocap and import it inside a 3D environment. So she became like more able also. And then we hired, a developer, like a pure tech, a pure developer. So he can really, you know, do the coding stuff. So now that's the team we have. We have Tristan, which is a 3D artist, Camilo, who's technologies and creative director, me, director, Susanna, lead dance artist. Hugo, he's our mocap master now and tech director. And Pierre Igor, who is the developer. And I have an assistant, administrative assistant, and a part-time administrator. So that's a kind of very small team. We do things that, you know, people like in France, for instance, they would be like 20 or 25. And when you talk about The Hobbit, they're like 2,500 probably, you know.
Huge production.
My friend Carlos, he directed the last Disney, Raya and the Last Dragon. I think there were 400 people. There were 400 people and, you know, like they have like, I don't know, like 80 animators and 3D artists. So, you know, we're working on a very small level in terms of resources. But we are very clever and we kind of stick together and we stay with the same people. So that's what allows us to do incredible things that people don't believe we are such a small team to do so many things. But I wish I had a bit more money and like my friend Carlos and have a bit more animators and 3D artists. Yes.
In due time, right? Like it's always a process.
Maybe not, you know, I'm into experimental stuff. So I learned, you know, I'm like pretty old now, so I know enough that, you know, I'm good for experimental stuff. So, you know, every time I try to get close to commercial stuff, it didn't really work. So, you know, I will not become rich with my art. And I like it like this, you know. I mean, I'd like to be rich, but I like to be in the experimental world. It's much more fun. I have much more liberty. Nobody tells me what to do. And I'm redirecting my own world. And now also like with my company, we are on a more sharing also kind of more horizontal way to think projects. So they're also part of the process of thinking, you know, what is coming next? What is the new challenge we're going to reach? But now for sure what we are so interested in is all these real-time performances, and we think that's the thing to do for us as performers, because that allows to perform but to also be inside the possibilities of the digital world. It's fun to do, really.
Well, actually that's wonderful also, because I'm looking forward to what's next for the company, right? Like, and, you know, being a dancer myself, one of the ways that we get jobs is through dancing opportunities. So one day I really hope that, you know, there'll be an advertisement with your company hiring dancers, you know, like that'll be wonderful.
We do. And actually, you know, I like that you talk about that, because that was also one of the reasons for we're working with Dia Naidu. She lives in Bangalore, and with Victoria Chiu. She lives in Melbourne. And these are two dancers that we've been working with, that we met before. And we invited Ian and Victoria to come to Geneva. They work with us on the digital pieces. So they are part of this digital company. They are some of our digital dancers. But when the COVID came, of course, it was impossible to invite them anymore. You cannot even go to Australia. So we thought, okay, so how can we continue to work with them? So that's when I started to do this project of the Comédie Virtuelle. So I thought, okay, they will be part of it. So we are going to invite them live to perform with us live. So Dia in Bangalore and Victor in Melbourne were working, not today, but tomorrow we'll be working with them. They will be connecting with their AirPods and we'll be talking just like normal. And then we've been spending hours and hours working together at a distance in different time zones. And also, I think, you know, I'm kind of proud to say that, you know, I'm at least for Dia, it was survival. You know, I think the job that we gave her allowed her to continue to survive, to get paid, you know, in India, that's not so easy. And also for, you know, Victoria, she has a family and she kept busy. It's an exciting work to do. We are their friends and we kept in contact. We kept working together and they got paid for it. And even Zilia got paid for it.
Nice.
So, you know, it's also part of our motivation is also to maintain the contact. And actually, we stayed so international during the COVID. I mean, I was surprised. I mean, this is one of the example, but you know, like people from all over the world connect with us. And so that was also like a very big kind of change in our head to say, oh, we know so many people. We are so connected with so many people around the world. And these people are really wanting to have interaction and wanting to do things. So we can stay alive. You know, we can stay connected internationally with our people. And this is one of the tools to do so. Because what is very interesting about, I think, these real-time experiences is that it's not only that it's in real-time performance, but also real-time a process. So it's very useful during the creative process to be in real-time. So we can work in real-time. We can experiment a lot of stuff. And then we could maybe record it and make it like really beautiful and taking a lot of, you know, time to clean everything. So it's also a tool for collaboration. So we have developed some projects called Virtual Crossings, which are kind of collaborative project. We did one with Argentina. We're going to do one with Melbourne, with Victoria. She has access to a mocap studio. And that means that we can work simultaneously dancers together and in the real, in the same space, you can meet like Zelia. I never met her before. I only saw her digitally, you know, I saw her on Zoom and digitally in the space. And the dancers, they dance with her. They never met her. They will hopefully. This is what I call the digital embodiment. So, you know, I mean, you're a dancer, you know what it is when they ask this, okay, well, now improvise with this guy or with this girl. You never met before. There was this kind of awkward start of before you know a little bit each other, you know, at least 5 or 10 minutes. And we realized that in the digital encounters, we have the same kind of shyness of the first encounter. So that's what I call the digital embodiment. So, you know, I think like in our brain, we kind of rewire how we connect to people and how we stay connected to people. And this has to do, this is a very interesting question, which is real time. What is real time? What is the advantage of real time? Why has it to be in real time? I think we are real time people. We really appreciate the fact that things are happening in front of us, you know, and we understand that. We like to watch, you know, real time football games or real time sport or, you know, it's very important for us, the disconnection. So that's why we are working on, but also to keep contact with our friends and collaborators and find new ones.
Yep. Well said. One of the things and one of the ways that I've done to also connect with the rest of the world is to start my own podcast. And that's how, you know, it led me to you as well, right? Like, thank God to technology.
And I can tell you, it's better be in COVID in 2021 than in 1985.
Exactly.
Because in 1985, you wouldn't have in the internet, you wouldn't have the possibility to do a podcast.
Yeah.
And you could only send letters to your friends.
Yeah, yeah. I think this whole conversation is sort of like a love letter to technology. And it's about time we actually embrace it and, you know, make you take advantage of it, really, you know, and advance, enhance our experiences
with
the world.
It's a tool. I mean, we are already tech people. I mean, we've been at the development of humanity is about tech. You know, the first tools that to carve stuff on
technology
the cage,
is not just like computers. It's everything that we use to enhance our civilization. It's
brain, because I mean, what a rock without a brain, you
exactly.
know, what can you do with a rock without a brain behind? So, you know, when people are afraid of AI, all these kind of things, it's like ignorance, because for now, we are still behind everything. You know, of course there is a danger, of course there is, but you know, a bow is very dangerous. You can kill someone with a bow. You can kill someone with a knife, you know? So it's just how you're going to use the tool. What is your goal? You know, of course, the militaries are into tech, of course, but they've always been, and they always develop killing machines. That's what they do, you know, but we don't develop killing machine. We do other things. We do art. So the same technology can be used in many different ways, you know, and it is up to you to draw what is the red line of your ethics, you know, where do you stop?
Great advice.
Like, I wouldn't work with the military, for instance.
Great advice. With great
power. That would be my red line.
Exactly. With great power comes great responsibility, but do not lose control of your robots because they might kill you, right? So last question before we go, and I think it's perfect to wrap things up right now. I just want to take everything away from all the technology and the company and really direct this personally at you. And this is an experimental question that I ask most of my guests because it's very fascinating for me, right? So personally for you, Gilles, like, what do you think makes a dancer?
This is a difficult question. What makes a choreographer? You know, that's also a question, because is a dancer made, I mean, does a dancer need a choreographer to be a dancer? Or, you know, what is dance anyway? So I think in my generation, what was called the new tendency in contemporary dance around, you know, the mid-90s, I think we were starting to work more conceptually and considering the body as you know, like a still breathing body as movement, for instance. Also a representation of the body that is not like necessarily beautiful or virtuoso. Different bodies and even non-professional bodies. So I think there's a lot of choreographers are starting to get into dance with non-dancers, like non-professional dancers, not even amateur dancers, just like what so-called normal people that are just, they don't move specifically. So I know there's been a lot of experiments. So I think, I mean, my understanding of what is a dancer is whoever calls himself or herself a dancer is a dancer. You know, is a position in life, is a position in the world. I've seen some really not skilled dancers as you know, what is about skill of technical skill, but they were beautiful dancers or they were making beautiful projects. You know, we just had, you know, passed away Raymond Hoge, which was a very special, very different body dancer, because he has a hunch and he has a very kind of carved spine, and he was like in a very kind of the non-traditional body for a dancer, but I think he was a beautiful dancer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is dance? I mean, there's a lot of some people, when I was young, when I started to dance, you know, like the 80s, I was fascinated by this kind of some French choreographer, they would hire like actors and they would train them as dancer, like super hard, and would take a lot of dance classes, and they would like be, and so they were not really, they couldn't lift their leg up here or do anything, but they were very precise, you know, like this kind of, you know, this like, you know, these American actors doing tap dancing, they have this kind of, you know, they're not like ballet dancers, but they've done ballet or they've done tap dancing, or they have this kind of normal way to move. I've seen some, you know, folk dancers, amazing folk dancers, like old flamenco dancer, just like someone just coming out and doing his thing, you know. So, you know, dance is, you know, and I've seen some crazy people just improvising in raves or, you know, like, you know, all type of dancer.
Thanks for bringing that
up. Maybe the question is, what is a professional dancer? Or, you know, like, I think when up to what point your dance become your tool of expression, and I think everybody's welcome. Any shape and size and gender is welcome into dance, into contemporary dance, because ballet is very exclusive and selective, and is get it pretty wrong, I guess. I think because you can also do ballet if you have a different body. So I think, you know, that's the thing. So we welcome everybody, but everybody can be a dancer.
Well, thank you so much, Jill. This has been such a pleasure, and I'm so happy to have finally been able to talk to you about this, because technology is also something that's emerging more and more in my life. So thank you for giving us all this insight and knowledge of how we can better use technology and better love technology. And I really wish you and the company all the very best. Thank you so much for coming on to the Background Dancer.
Thank you.
Gilles Jabon has been my guest today, where we talked about technology and the augmented reality. Check out the show notes for more information regarding Gilles' work as well as that of the company. And if you are a dance and technology enthusiast yourself, head on over to the new website that we have here at The Background Dancer at backgrounddancer.com. That's Background Dancer with two D's, where you can find more information as well as references for this particular episode. Once again, appreciate your time. Stay healthy, stay happy, and I will see you in the next one. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe, comment, and leave a review on your designated podcast and social media platforms. If you found this interesting or helpful, feel free to share with members of your community so that they too may connect with us in our quest to foreground dance in the background. I am Jason Yup of The Background Dancer, and as always, catch you next time. Calling all dance educators and leaders, whether it's through a professional development weekend, day, or workshop, Lauren Ritchie is passionate about connecting with fellow educators who are in the trenches, pouring their hearts into their work with unwavering dedication. From navigating stress and perfectionism to fostering confidence and resilience in dancers, Lauren provides invaluable guidance on supporting students through every step of their journey. Because, let's face it, our work changes lives, and it's most impactful when teachers embrace, communicate, and practice mental skills themselves. Join her online teacher workshops and education sessions, where you explore topics like understanding the brain stages of your students, enhancing motivation, effective feedback strategies, preparing for competition, and fostering team cohesion. Ready to transform your teaching approach and empower your students like never before? Reach out today to learn more at www.withlauren.ca/teacher-workshops or click the link in the show notes below.